Hello, lacrosse friends. Welcome once again to Box the Beat on NLL Radio, also available on iTunes via Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I am Stephen Stamp, your host and an editor at ilindoor.com, where you can get the best of NLL coverage and coverage of the rest of the box lacrosse world. The Calgary Roughnecks are the 2019 National Lacrosse League Cup champions after a stirring championship series with the Buffalo Bandits. A hat tip to the Bandits, who had a great season, were worthy opponents, but Calgary really brought everything together when they needed to get that championship. There are so many great stories from this team, from this series, from this championship. I spoke with four members of the team this week. Very excited to share those conversations with you, lacrosse friends. We'll go with the order that I recorded them in. We'll start with Jesse King, the lefty forward who came back from his second serious knee injury in a couple of years to join the team with two games left in the regular season. Then we go to Zach Currier, the second-year player who is having such a huge impact for them and has since he got on the floor and is just getting better in his all-around game. Then the captain, Dan McCray, who had a great, great season, had a big goal and a big assist in this series, some big plays and, of course, some good defensive work as well. And then assistant coach Bob McMahon. Dan McCray got the trophy from Commissioner Nick Sakevich, and the first person he handed to was Bob McMahon. We're going to talk about why. We're going to talk about McMahon's career, and he has some great things to say about the process of building towards a championship. It's a big episode, the champions episode of Box the Beat on NLL Radio. Joining me on Box the Beat, lefty forward for the champion Roughnecks, Jesse King. Welcome to the show and congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's got to have been pretty exciting. I have to imagine that you had visions of 2017 when you missed the whole season and Georgia went and won a championship. I know you were part of that team, it's got to be hard to watch. And then here you are with Calgary and they get so hot down the stretch, but you were such a big contributor, even though you only played two games at the end of the regular season and then you're there for the postseason. What did it feel like when that last buzzer, or well, when the goal went in from Reece Dutch and you knew that you guys had done it?
Yeah, I think not to take anything away from when I was with the Swarm and winning a championship with those guys, it just was a little bit sweeter when you're a little bit of a bigger part on the floor and you're able to, you know, participate and be out there with your teammates, doing whatever you can to try and accomplish what we ended up accomplishing. So it's a really great feeling knowing that I could, you know, give my all out there for my teammates and, you know, them do the same for me and us eventually come out with the common goal.
There was a very good news story on Czech TV in Victoria about the season you dealt with, having a second injury after, of course, you missed the whole season of 2017 and had that rehab. And they talked about how, you know, I mean, there was questions about your career, about how you were going to be able to come back from the first injury. And this time, they said it wasn't as severe, but it's still, you know, the process, which in some ways helps because you know what you've got to go do. But on the other hand, you know how long a road back it is. What was it like doing, doing the rehab again?
Yeah, it was an emotional week when I first found out about what had happened to my knee. And then once you kind of push aside all those emotions and know that, you know, make that decision that you really want to push and try and make a comeback and get back to being where, you know, I once was really difficult to start. And then just kind of like what I said in my other interview was leaning back on, you know, friends, family, the community that surrounded me was basically, the entire reason that it was at any way possible. I had friends pushing me, asking how I was, the guys in the Roughnecks always asking how I was, what I was doing, how my training was going. It kind of holds up to that a little bit of an accountable piece, too, when you're you to a point where you might feel like you're, you know, plateauing a little bit. And just kind of getting over those humps during the weeks where you feel like you might be having a bad week via training. And then, you know, at the end of the day, I was about 2 weeks out and I still didn't feel like I was going to be able to play. And then, you know, that patience kind of was wearing a little thin. And then eventually it just, you know, I had a really great couple weeks here and there and kept persevering and knew what I had to do to, you know, get back to again where I was. And it all ended up working out for the best, thankfully, and I've got the Roughneck staff to thank for that. I've got, you know, my teammates again, my family, everyone that, you know, reached out and was able to, you know, give me some kind of motivation throughout the entire process.
It must have been pretty exciting when you got to get back on the floor. It was the May 6th game in San Diego, and it must have been quite an emotional moment just to get out and start the game.
Yeah, my that would have been my third game at that point against San Diego. My first game was against Georgia, and I think that was kind of the biggest turning point for me. Was just, you know, there was definitely a lot of excitement going on, but also a lot of nerves. Kind of feeling the doc had told me that I felt or looked good, mm-hmm. and he felt confident with me going back in, and I just had to, you know, trust him and knowing that he felt like I was in the right place and ready to play and go out there and try not to think about, you know, that knee too much, which is at the end of the day is my goal is to go out there and, you know, not even think about it and not let it affect me in any way. And I think that by, you know, maybe after the first period and once I got that first goal too, it was kind of smooth sailing from there.
Yeah, and that was my mistake. I actually had the playoff page open and not the regular season page. So of course, you got a couple of regular season games in, and then the four postseason games. And as emotional as it was, I'm sure getting back on the floor to start, that must have been trumped when someone handed you the NLL Cup.
Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about it. I mean, you get so happy to, you know, hold that thing above your head and, you know, again, to be out there, to be in Calgary, you know, with my family, with some of my family there, the team, your guys that, you know, have been working towards getting to this point, you know, more or less their entire lives. It was so special, such an exciting moment, and it definitely outweighed any kind of, you know, nervousness or doubt or anything that I've ever, you know, experienced. So it was a really special moment for me, and I know it's special for a lot of other guys as well. So we're kind of just relishing in it as we speak.
Nice. I actually ran into Dan McCray last night where he was coaching his Burlington Chiefs, and he said, "Oh yeah, we're doing an interview tomorrow, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And I said, "You look like you're still just glowing from winning." He's like, "Yeah." And he still couldn't stop smiling. It's a couple of days after.
Yeah, everyone keeps asking me about it at work and in Victoria, and I'm still kind of seeing, like, you know, friends and family for the first time since it's happened. Yeah. It's all smiles. I think it will be for a while here.
Yeah. I think people, if they're not aware of some of the connections, they might think, wow, you know, you're out for the whole season after you're traded to a team. There must be a challenge to kind of integrate, especially when you're just training and doing rehab and not getting to go out and compete with them. But it must have helped that there are a bunch of guys that you've played with in Victoria, so you have familiarity and you have gone to battle with a lot of these guys.
Yeah, I think that was definitely a huge factor at all. You know, Dan, guy who played in Victoria, such a special guy, special captain to have, and he's always reaching out. Dane Dobie was always reaching out, asking how I was, and then once in a while I got to see, you know, Reese and Tyler and Greg in town and be hit at the box once in a while too, which made the process a lot smoother. And it was also just nice to know that they were thinking of you. It kind of gives you that little bit more of confidence, knowing that they're wondering when you're going to be back, how long it's going to be, kind of thing. So I definitely, if anyone has to go through that again, I would say latch on to those friends that are going to support you and keep them close and
hopefully they can push you through whatever you're kind of battling, right?
It's fun sometimes to look back and just remember. I know Rich Kilgore, I had him on the show last week or a couple weeks ago, and was saying, okay, you know, here are some challenges for you, and they've got Jesse King back, and he said, I hadn't remembered it at the time. He's like, yeah, I remember that hat trick he scored against us in the 2013 Man Cup, which was you were a junior call-up with the Victoria Shamrocks, and in game one of the Man Cup, it was 4-2 Six Nations through two periods, and then in the third period, you scored three goals in a 4.5-minute span. Victoria wins the game 5-4, and they were well aware of what you could bring to the team even then as a 21-year-old. But unfortunately for you, you had to go back to Ohio State to get started on school for the year. And I know they felt like if you'd been able to stay, and I think a lot of people felt like if you'd been able to stay, you know, that Man Cup would have been a tougher one for the Chiefs, who eventually won in six games. But wow, you've had a lot of big games against some of these guys that you face on the other side as well.
Win or lose are going to, you know, develop you and turn you into the player that you want to be. I think if you go through those processes and you're always winning in those situations, then, you know, you're not learning as much as you could do from, you know, a big loss. So I've might have played in a bunch of those big games, and I also lost a lot of those big games. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you can speak to a lot of the guys that are in this league and are playing other professional sports, that you're going to learn a lot from those losses as much as you would from a win. But when you do get those wins, it does feel a lot better knowing that, you know, you've been in these situations before, you know what it feels like to be on the other side of it.
The last thing I want to ask you about is something that a lot of people noticed and commented on, which was Dane Doby and his role. You mentioned him reaching out to you. And when he was announced as the MVP, he and Kayla Spies said, I know you don't like to talk about it yourself. And I experienced that too, interviewing Dane for this show a few weeks ago. And he's a terrific guest. He does a good interview, but he doesn't like to talk a whole lot about himself. And he just said, yeah, I'm not going to talk about me. And immediately brings Christian Del Bianco over. And I thought in the ceremony, in the celebration after, he just seemed to be having as much fun or enjoying other people getting the trophy, maybe more than when it was handed to him.
Yeah, I mean, for a guy like Dope, he's been in this situation before, and he knows what it feels like. And he was, you know, I think it's 2009 when he won his first one, and he remembers that feeling of what it was like to be young in this league and be able to get a championship. I mean, if you think about it, like, a whole 10 years has gone by since that has happened, and I think that he's a guy that likes to share those moments with people as much as he does to just happen by himself, which is a testament to how great of a leader he can be. It's, you know, he's a special guy when it comes to how talented he is a lacrosse player, and then also what he can do with his, you know, words and his coaching and his leadership off the floor. And I think that was a big reason why we were able to be so successful as well.
Well, I appreciate your time coming on the show, and once again, congratulations. It was a great series, a great final game, and between two terrific teams, and congratulations and thanks.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Joining me on Box of the Beat, the transition player for the Calgary Roughnecks, and a guy who's won a bunch of championships over the last little while that we'll get into, Zach Currier. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
It was really something. I want to start by talking about it. It's funny because the goal of the play of the game, the Geico play of the game that they do, was your goal that you scored where you ran transition with Mitch Wild. You toss the pass to him. He shoots. It's stopped. You pick up the loose ball and dunk it in from behind. And great play, but I think obviously, after the game, if they'd been able to choose the play of the game, because that runs with a few minutes left, some people, I'm sure, would have said Reese Dutch's winning goal, which was terrific and everything for you guys, obviously. But to me, I thought the play that jumped out was in overtime, Buffalo gets the ball, Christian Del Bianco makes a save on Corey Small, Dane Smith comes up with it, Del Bianco is down, and somehow you stop the ball from going in the net. And I've watched it over and over and over again to try and figure out exactly what happened. Can you tell us what happened on that play?
I can tell you the start of it, at least. I was playing defense, and I saw there's a shot on net, and Gels was down. I saw the ball trickle away from him, and then I saw a wide-open Dane Smith about to scoop the ball. So I thought, there's no way Delb can get up and get into the cage at this point, and I can't get out and check his stick. So I think my only option was try to hop in net and save it. And I don't even know if it hit me. I've seen it. It kind of looks like it might hit the crossbar even. I don't know.
Okay.
But regardless, I hopped in there and tried to, and the ball stayed out, and then Delb gets up and makes another massive save on Sean Evans, which is not a tough guy to stop, especially in a clutch situation like that. He usually buries that 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty crazy sequence of events there, and I'm just so glad that the ball ended up staying out and we were able to close out the next possession.
And you actually had another part in the play, because after that save on Evans, where he did run into some wide open space, and that was a great save by DelBianco, and then the ball rolls over, you pick it up, and as you're getting cross-checked into the crease for what would have been a back-in violation, you just kind of flick the ball over to the far side. It looked like you had a sense that Tyson Bell or somebody was over there, but were you just trying to get it out of harm's way and give them some time to go get the ball?
I mean, yeah, I was just putting it into the safest spot that I could find at the time. I mean, I didn't want to just chuck the ball into the opposing end and give them the ball back.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to give the ball back at the top of the floor or anything. So I figured the corner would have been the best spot for us to battle for it. So I put it there, and luckily Tyson scooped the ball up, and then we got the timeout called, and then we got the ball to the guys who scored all the goals.
The celebration was really something. I mean, Dane Doby kind of kicked it all off, and it feels like anytime Dane Doby is part of a celebration, it's going to be a lot of fun. But I noticed that you handed the trophy. I mean, it gets passed around, obviously, and you handed it to Tyler Burton. And I thought that was really appropriate, given how often the two of you seem to work together in that final game in particular. I mean, through the season, but in that game, there are two plays I recall in particular. One was a double team down low by the goal line, very close to the crease, and the two of you jumped on, I can't remember who it was, whether it was Dane Smith or whoever, and I think it might have been Dane, actually, and the two of you got on him and kind of drove him into the backboards and eventually came up with the ball. The other one, though, is, of course, right near the end of the game, and off a face-off, the ball pops loose, and it looked like a bandit was going to get it, and Burton chased and dove and was able to just poke it free of the crowd a bit. You scooped it up and got a timeout to set things up, and I just thought that was a cool moment, seeing you hand it off, because you two really had some synergy going.
Yeah, we do for sure. I mean, we work together on all the face-offs all year long, and then he's on my line too for defense, so we're always talking with one another, and he's just such a competitor, and he loves our team, and he gets so fired up. I mean, you watch the replay of his goal, and he's screaming into the camera for a good 15 seconds afterwards, just showing how pumped up he is to get the team going, get the crowd going, and it did. That's a huge momentum play. I think that's the second or third goal he had for us in the playoffs. The other one was a massive one in San Diego.
Right.
But he's been great for us all postseason and all season long, and he's a warrior. I just saw him, and then he looked, he wanted it. His eyes were lighting up. He seemed like he wanted it. So I said, yeah, sure. You got it.
It's interesting because there's always – you know, you're going to see the superstars, you're going to see the guys who get the attention, and a lot of it comes from numbers and things. So you look at, you know, Dane Doby and Curtis Dixon obviously get a lot of attention. People notice you. You've got, not that you mean it, but you've got to be, but you've got a kind of a flashy game because you put up numbers like all the loose balls and things. But it's to win a championship, you also need, obviously, guys like Tyler Burton, who isn't going to put up the same numbers, but so integral. And, you know, Eli Slum and Reese Callies were so big. And, you know, Jesse King coming back. It just seems like everything really clicked for you guys, which I guess has to happen to win a championship in such a tough league.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, any team could really beat any team on any given night, depending on, like, how well you game plan, how much energy you guys have got that game, like, how well you're shooting the ball, you run into a hot goalie. Like, there are so many different factors that play into winning in this league, and the fact that we have so much parity among us is a great thing, but it's a scary thing too, because you can't ever take a night off. So we need every guy from the top and bottom of our lineup to show up every single night. And down the stretch, we did. We did. We had every person in our lineup in that final game made massive plays for us.
Yeah.
Every person. I could go through the lineup and name you a big play that everyone did. But the fact that we had so much depth on our back end and our front end, and everyone was so selfless. No one's worried about getting theirs. We're always worried about the collective goal as a team. So I think that's the reason we were successful, just because of how much of a team we did actually play like throughout the postseason and the end of the regular season.
I mentioned numbers and statistics, and it's really kind of eerie to look at your numbers for your two seasons in the NLL. I don't know if you've looked at this much, but I know your dad has, because he mentioned it to me, but I'd actually written about this already.
They're pretty similar.
Yeah, 22 points each season. Your first year, you had 200 loose balls. This year, you had 199. Last year, 33 caused turnovers. This year, 34. Just kind of crazy how similar they were. I don't even know if I have a question. I just think it's really strange.
Yeah, it was strange, but whatever. Consistent, I guess.
Yeah. It's, obviously what you're aiming to do is perform consistently throughout throughout your career. And I think it's interesting to watch your development, because I know as a rookie, you went through what a lot of rookies go through early in the season, which was adjusting to the NLL, the speed, the pace, the different play. And I thought you played well right off the bat, but I know the team felt like you got more and more consistent as the season went on, with your defensive coverage, with a lot of the little things that we don't necessarily see or folks don't necessarily notice as much. But do you feel like you've got your game at a more consistent level at this point?
Definitely. I would definitely say that I am less of a liability on defense now. I got picked apart pretty good by some of the superstars in this league as a rookie, and it really made me have to look at the film and break it down and look at how my feet are like facing on every play, and when I'm getting beat, when I'm not getting beat. So I really had to sit down and say, all right, what the heck am I doing wrong back here, and how can I fix it so I can be more consistent and be relied upon back there. And it's a huge testament to my teammates helping me through it. Dan McRae worked with me all year, and we were always communicating on the bench and in between shifts and in between quarters about what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. So I looked at myself individually, and I also got carried along by my teammates. So I'm thankful that I had teammates to help me along, and I'm thankful that I was able to get my game to a more consistent place this year.
And speaking of this year, I mean, it's been a pretty good 10 months or so for you. Started off with a bit of a bittersweet silver medal at the World Championship that I think basically everyone watching and who saw it all knows probably should have been a gold medal. And I know you guys aren't happy with that, but it's still a silver medal at the World Championship. But then MLL Championship, Man Cup Championship, and now an NLL Cup Championship. That's a pretty good run.
Yeah. It was a great summer, and I have a ton of great memories to go along with it. The Israel one is tough. Gonna hurt forever. I'll never forget the last 10 minutes of that game. But it is what it is. And 3 years from now, I just have to change the outcome and try to make sure that I get that one too. But it has been an awesome summer, and I guess winter as well, with Calgary and Denver and Peterborough and Team Canada. But I've had a great time going along for the ride, and the guys I've met is awesome, and that's 90% of the reason why I play the game is to have these experiences and create memories and create friendships throughout the sport of lacrosse.
It's not like you get a big break before you get back into things. I know the Man Cup banner is being raised this Thursday at the Peterborough Lakers home opener, and I'm sure things get going with the Denver Outlaws relatively soon. But are you gonna be there on Thursday when the Lakers start up?
Yep, I'll be there Thursday, and I will also be in New York on Friday and Atlanta on Sunday, both of the Outlaws. So not much of a break at all. I don't know any other sports where you win a championship and have three games the next week, so it's definitely interesting.
And you're pretty busy with work, too. I know you've got an engineering degree, and you're working on you're like a principal designer for the Warp Stickheads, right?
Yes, I work with the knit designers and the rest of the development team here, and we've developed the Warp lacrosse head at Warrior. Okay.
So lots of stuff going on. I appreciate you fitting me into your schedule. I know you are busy, so it's great that you could take the time, and always fun to catch up. And I'll see you on Thursday. And just for anyone who's listening, you can catch that game. It's free on Lacrosse TV. Go to lacrosse-tv.com. The whole first week of the MSL season is free, so check it out and then get your subscription and watch the games. And Zach Currier, thanks for your time and great chatting with you.
Yeah, no problem at all. I'll see you Thursday.
Joining me on Box the Beat, the captain of the NLL champion Calgary Roughnecks, Dan McRae. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Now, I ran into you last night as we're recording on Tuesday. Monday night, I was covering a Burlington at Peterborough Junior A game for the local paper, and you're coaching Burlington. And I mentioned that you didn't seem like you'd been able to wipe the smile off your face since Saturday night. How are you feeling now? Have you been able to process this whole championship?
The feeling's still settling in. I think starting to feel a little bit better physically, maybe, you know. It's the hangover's starting to wear off a bit here finally, you know, getting back at work and coaching real life starting to settle back in. But it still hasn't really set in, I don't think. You know, guys, I'm still like flipping through pictures during the day and just catching myself smiling. And, you know, guys are sharing, you know, videos and clips and memories from the game and from the night. So I don't know when it's going to be, but, you know, I'm not complaining. That's for sure.
Now, the... It's interesting, you joined the Roughnecks in 2011, so just after, you know, a couple of years after they had won the previous title. So, you know, you overlapped with some of the guys who won that championship. And I'm curious how they reacted, you know, Dean Dobie and some of the others who, you know, that you will have talked to, who were part of that one and either directly or indirectly part of this one.
Yeah, I mean... You know, being with the same organization for 9 years, it's been fantastic. And you have a lot of, you know, either guys you played with or coaches or, you know, scouts or anyone that's kind of, you know, around the organization that kind of helps shape or model the person that you know, or player that you turn out to be. And, you know, one of the guys that kind of jumped out right away that, you know, not with our team currently, but he was my captain, my first professional captain. He was our captain in Calgary for 5 years, is Andrew McBride. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I learned a lot from Andrew over the course of playing with him. You know, I thought he was a fantastic leader, great communicator, and obviously he's got a bunch of stats that speak for the type of player that he was on the floor. But he's a guy that I've always kept in touch with, you know, since he's been gone from his playing days in Calgary. So he's a guy that, you know, has kind of been a good resource for me. But some of the guys that are still around, obviously you mentioned a couple of them there with Dane Dobie. You know, you hear so many guys talk about, you know, what he brings to our team, not only on the floor. I think, you know, everybody knows that. You've just been watching our games, how special of a player he is. But, you know, just what he can bring into our locker room and, the confidence he brings and instills in guys just when he speaks up and starts talking in our room is phenomenal. And then another guy that was great for myself and I think personally was Mike Carnegie. You know, having him in our locker room, you know, going through the process of this season and especially through the playoffs and the two games of the championship series, he was phenomenal. And you know, being just a, you know, a resource for myself to just ask him, like, hey, what do you say, what do you do in these situations, what did people do in the last time in their championship game in 2009? And Mike was able to share some words, some moments and advice with me that I thought was very useful and inevitably helped to a great outcome for our team.
We talked about the emotions, how exciting it was, and you talked about, you know, having a fiery leader like Dane Dobie as part of the team. And I really enjoyed the question that Kayla Spies asked on the floor post-game when she asked about, you know, keeping composure on the bench, containing emotions, because Dane Dobie is such a great leader. But that is one challenge I know he has, is kind of is keeping the emotions at a level that, that everyone can still function. And that's something Kurt Malowski, I know, has always preached and worked on. How did you guys manage to establish the tone of the right balance between the fiery excitement and being able to stay calm enough to perform intellectually?
Yeah, I mean, hey, it's not easy. I can't give you an answer and say, oh, it's easy because we did it this way. I think, you know, anytime somebody mentions those names, Kurt Malofsky and Dane Dobie, one of the first things you think of, other than, you know, how phenomenal of the lacrosse players and lacrosse minds they are, is just the raw emotion that they bring to lacrosse games because of, you know, how much heart they have and how big a competitor that they both are, that it's tough for them to hold them back. But, you know, credit to both of those guys, you know, making such big strides. I think personally, and making such a big focal point that they, you know, have been trying to improve on, and controlling their emotions a lot more on the bench, and relaying that to our team, and making that a huge focus point for us going into training camp this year. You know, realizing that how important and impactful special teams are in the NLL and in today's game. You know, it was a big focus for us, you know, to try to stay out of the box as much as we can. Try to not let, you know, outside factors, you know, things that we can't control affect the way that we're playing and wasting our emotion and energy on those types of things. So to answer your question, it's something that we are trying to, you know, instill in our guys since training camp. And because, you know, we've been practicing it since that time and, you know, we had so many situations throughout the course of the regular season where that was important. We were in tight games. We were in battles. You know, we had ups and downs all year long that we got to practice those situations over the course of the year. So, yeah, to go back and kind of answer your question, it was repetitiveness and it was reps throughout the year. And it was a big focus for us because the coaching staff instilled that early on.
One real change between the two games of the final that I found was the role of transition scoring in the games. The first game, obviously, both teams pretty contained, did a good job of limiting. Buffalo got a few late when they were really trying to turn things around and come back in the first game. In the second game, both of you had a lot of transition, but some of them are obvious. I mean, your pass to Curtis Dixon for his goal was really jumped out, a great pass. But there are others. Zach Currier had a goal and an assist, and those were pretty visible. But he also, there was one play where Travis Burton scored. Tyler Burton. I was just thinking about Travis's the other day, but where Tyler Burton scored a huge goal, and part of that was Zach Currier hustling to the bench, like sprinting full speed to the point where he couldn't even go into the bench. He used the change box is a deceleration zone to get Dane Dobie out, and Burton used Dobie as a decoy. And then one guy who doesn't turn up on the score sheet is Tyson Bell. He didn't get any points, but on the goal that Dane Dobie scored to make it 13-12, Bell had actually been knocked down to the floor by a hard pick and was just getting back to his feet when Del Bianco made the save, and he recognized what was happening and sprinted as hard as he could to the bench, and that got Dobie out just in time to get Del Bianco's pass. So I thought it was interesting, you know, to look at that kind of thing where there's the guys on the score sheet that turned up. I think five of the defenders plus Del Bianco all got points, but man, there's contributions all over the place that don't show up in the score sheet.
Yeah, I mean, that's so true. You know, I'm so happy you brought up, you know, Tyson Bell's play there. Obviously, you know, Zach Currier going into the gate, and you know, for somebody to notice something like that, you have to watch a lot of lacrosse. So you know, that makes me happy that you're able to notice something like that. Those D guys running into the bench. Being a D guy myself, you know, not a lot of people see that and they don't get the credit that they deserve sometimes. But, you know, I remember, you know, probably in my third, fourth year, like, Mouse has been giving guys credit and making sure that everybody on the team knows who got to the door to create those transition opportunities. Like, everybody obviously knows Dane Dobie is, you know, one of the deadliest guys on a breakaway, especially out of the Saddle Dome in the fourth quarter. You know, he's known for, you know, catching those breakaway passes or transition passes and burying on those breakaways, and then vice versa, Curtis Dixon. So I can remember, you know, from my early on in my career as a Roughneck, that Kurt Malofsky, always coming down the bench, wanting to know who it was that got to the door that created any of those breakaway transition opportunities, and making sure that they got the bat on the back and the credit that they deserve. So, you know, within our group, whether it's just the D guys or just within our whole room, when those plays are made, those small battles, those are big little, we call them little plays, but those are big you know, momentum changing moments in the game that our group makes sure that everybody knows who it is that made that, and you give that guy a pat on the back and you let him know that, hey, that didn't go unnoticed, and that goes a long way for our group. So just an element that just made this group so special.
Interesting correlation, I think, between, we talked about the controlling and containing the emotions and these transition opportunities and the credit for the players getting to the bench. And there's a common thread, right, of, you know, recognition of repetition, of having to, you know, with the composure, practicing it and repeating again and again, this is how we will handle this. And the same thing, as you said, you know, Mouse giving credit to the guys who make those little big plays. And it's, you know, recognizing those things that are central to being successful and just doing it over and over, because that kind of stuff doesn't happen in a week or a month or a year even. I mean, that's the kind of thing that happens over the course of people's careers.
Yeah, that's so true. And it's kind of, you know, the group I've been with there, it's kind of the core group of guys that have been around with the Rough Neck 3, you know, between, you know, 7 and 10 years, you want to call it, that have seen the ups and downs. And we felt like we were, you know, we got close there in 2014, but, you know, it's actually, you know, getting the job done here in 2009. We have so many, you know, rookies, second-year guys that played huge minutes, you know, Christian Del Bianco, Eli Salama, Reese Callies, Zach Currier, you know, every guy, you know, pulls a bit, piece of the rope. But, you know, so much of the credit has to go to the guys at the top that, you know, put us through the ropes every day. And, you know, Kurt Malofsky is drawing up the practice plans every week and, you know, cutting up the tape and putting the game plans in. And that guy's won at pretty much every level he's been at. So he knows the preparation that goes into, you know, to completing your ultimate goal and winning championships. So that's where it all stems from. You know, it trickles down from the top. And when you have people of the caliber, Kurt Malofsky up there, you know, you got to believe that you're going to have success someday. It might not come immediate, but sometimes, you know, the juice is worth the squeeze when it takes a little bit longer. And this was a sweet one for sure.
The last thing I want to ask you about is, you know, the coaching staff. We've talked about Kurt Malofsky. Rob Williams has come in and just been there for a couple of years, but I've got a lot of respect for him. I've gotten to know him through a couple of Man Cups, and I really like what he does as a coach. And then Bob McMahon, who you handed the trophy to. And again, Kayla Spies asked you about this. I just want to touch on that because he's a guy that I've admired for a long time, always. Like one of those guys you can just sit and talk about lacrosse with forever. And he's such a wealth of knowledge, and it obviously meant a lot to you guys to get him that cup pretty quickly.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's been watching that clip over and over, man. And it's hard not to, you know, get a little choked up when you see him lift the cup. He's been around professional lacrosse. I think it was something like, you know, you can ask him when you talk to him, you know, 19, 20 years, something like that. And, the championship has just been eluding them for whatever reason. So I can't take credit for it. You know, it was something that, you know, a couple of the other guys in our leadership group kind of brought forward. And, like, we have to give it to Bobby first. And I was like, as soon as I heard that, I was like, 1,000% that's happening. You know, I mentioned to Kayla that, you know, Bobby and I both live in Ontario. So we get to travel, you know, flying out of Toronto usually every week together to Calgary or wherever the games are, back and forth. That's exactly it. He's a guy that, you know, you can sit next to on a 5-hour flight and you talk to the whole time. You don't, you know, open up your TV or look at your phone once. You're just talking to him the whole time, whether it's about life or lacrosse. Bobby's, you know, a great listener and he provides, you know, a ton of knowledge to you, and he's just kind of that fatherly figure for us on the bench. The guy, whenever, you know, he said something, everybody's listening, and I don't think there was a more, you know, a better guy to hand that off to, and I couldn't be prouder, you know, to to be able to be the one to actually give it to him physically and then watch him raise it up. So I could watch that clip of him lifting up the cup forever. That was a special one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a big moment, quite a moving moment for all of us who got to watch it. I definitely appreciate you taking the time to chat. It's always good to talk lacrosse with you, and congratulations, and thanks once again.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Steve. Appreciate it.
Joining me on Boxel Beat, assistant coach with the champion Calgary Roughnecks, Bob McMahon. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
So, the obviously, the championship, very exciting. I would like to start out by having you just run through for us your where you've coached. Like, you're kind of go through your coaching career in the NLL, because I know you've been around quite a while, and Dan McRae talked about how you've been, you know, looking for that championship. Can you just run through your stops along the way?
Yeah, I was fortunate to start with the older Detroit Turbos back in the early 90s. Did a couple of years there. They moved on to Rochester, took a couple of years off, and started up again with Terry Sanderson in Albany. Did 4 years there. Went to Phoenix, the Arizona Sting, for 4 years with Bobby Hamley. Went over to Colorado Mammoth for three or four, and then I've been with Calgary for about seven. So it's been a long road.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is interesting, I mean, I've talked to you about this, actually watching an Arena Lacrosse League game when you were out, you know, watching one of your sons play, and, you know, we were just chatting, and I remember asking you, because I was, you know, there were some teams looking for head coaches, I remember asking if you'd have any interest in being a head coach again, and you seem pretty happy with your role right now, with your, you know, the not having that head coach, the pressure, the time crunch, being the assistant, doing your role, and being part of some terrific lacrosse teams.
Yeah, I like what I do. You know, I'm very fortunate that I'm able to work with some very good head coaches too, and Bob Hamley and Mouse over the last 7 years, and you know, they allow me to, you know, have a lot of input into what's done and share what I've learned from past coaches and past players, and you know, I feel that, you know, I've had some input into some of the success, and you know, it takes an awful lot of energy to be a head coach in this league, and you know, as you get old, maybe you lose a little bit of that energy, and there's so many good coaches out there now too that are just looking for the opportunity to get into this league, so you know, it's probably better to bring along the young guys and continue to develop good coaches for the league as well.
I know that the players and the other coaches, Kurt Mulawski and others, certainly appreciate the contributions you make. And that was Dan McRae pointed out that it wasn't his idea alone to hand you the trophy after he got it. That a bunch of the veterans said, "Hey, if we get this thing, we're gonna give it to Bob." Or it may have been when they were waiting for the presentation. Actually, I think on the floor said when Nick Sakevich hands it to you, give it to Bob. And he was like, absolutely. And I think that speaks to the respect they have for you. And what was that moment like when he handed you that trophy?
I was very humbled. You know, I thought it was such an unselfish act by, you know, a great group of players. And, you know, in hindsight, was I expecting it? No, not at all. Was I surprised? In hindsight, no, because if, you know, you get to know the character of the people in that room, and you know, I was just very, very appreciative. You know, we sort of joked about it that, you know, I was kind of like the Marv Levy of the NLL. And if it had gone to game three in Buffalo, you know, there was a very good chance that, you know, maybe I was just going to stay home and not get that fifth loss in the final. But I thought it was a very, very unselfish act. And you know, I was just happy for the players. You know, Curtis Dixon's been through it for 7 years. Curtis Manning's been through it for 6 or 7 years. And, you know, it could have easily been them taking the trophy first as well.
Yeah. And for you, I mean, there are a lot of moving parts to this team this year, with Jesse King out for much of the year and then joining the team with just a couple games to go, Curtis Dixon missing some games, Reese Dutch coming in, all the, you know, the rookies like Salama and Reese on defense. And what was the process like integrating all of these new guys, and still, like, there has been a strong core and some continuity there, but also, you know, a lot of changes as there want to be in any given season.
Yeah, you know, we had our adversity early, and that's something that we talked about going into the playoffs, that, you know, our adversity came early, and we had a plan. You know, we thought we had the right people on the bus. It was kind of like just getting them all into the right seats. You know, management made a great play in going out and get Reese Dutch early to replace a couple of guys that we were missing early. I thought we drafted really well in Reese Calais and Eli Salam and Shane Simpson. And we made a commitment to play them. They were young kids. They were rookies. But we made the commitment to play them. And I think they all three of them probably played, you know, 15, 16 games over the course of the season. And we knew it was going to, you know, pay dividends once we got to the finals. So, you know, I think we had a plan. It was just, you know, and Jesse coming back too. We knew he was going to come back for the last two games. So it was just, you know, we sort of had to, you know, we had to get over the hump. And, you know, there were some tough nights. But we knew we were going to be okay once we got everybody going late in the year.
It's interesting with Jesse King, you know, being new to the team, but a lot of you guys obviously would be familiar with him, but I think Dan Taylor and Riley Lowen, both really good, solid lefties. They actually each scored 46 points on the season, and they both do contribute in a big way, but Jesse King is that one. He's that guy who can so much can flow through, and he can make such a difference. And I also thought it was interesting how much he went back and played defensive shifts in reverse transition through the playoffs.
Yeah, Jesse's, you know, I being a Western player, I hadn't seen Jesse play all that much, and I was so impressed with him in training camp. And, you know, he was kind of, you know, a huge piece that was going to, you know, maybe push us over the top or at least give us the opportunity to compete with the big dogs. And then unfortunately he got hurt in the last weekend of camp. And then Riley and Danny Taylor, you know, they had stepped up their game, and they play very, very well over the course of the year. And, you know, we've asked them to play big, and they're both big men. And they played in the dirty areas. They played in the really, really tough spots. And, you know, I like to think that they had some contribution to Dane's success over the course of the year. And I'm sure Dane would, you know, also agree that, you know, they really helped him produce over the course of the season. And then when Jesse came back, you know, it was like a deadline trade that we didn't have to make. You know, we got a marquee world-class player at the deadline and didn't have to spend anything for him.
And obviously Dane Dolby, such a huge role this year in the success of the team in the regular season and the playoffs. And I think it's amazing. You know, there were some changes and things, and this is a guy who has been around for a dozen years in the National Lacrosse League and has been a very, very good player that whole time. And yet he was able to add 25 points to his career high as a scorer. That's really remarkable to have had that high level of success all along and then bump it up by that much. What was it that made him so successful this year?
You know, he's just such a good player. He probably has this, you know, the best lacrosse IQ that I've been around, you know, together at the high skill level, and like his compete level is second to none. But I think, you know, with Jesse getting hurt, like Dane came back to our team. Dane was a free agent at the beginning of the year.
Right.
And part of the reason he wanted to come back to Calgary is, you know, he had a good career there, but he also saw an opportunity that we could win. And then when Jesse went down, I think he knew that he really had to elevate his game, you know, and help us carry us through to the point where we had our full team back near the end of the year. And I mean, he was just consistent. It was game in, game out. It's not like he had 6 and 7 goal games and then went, you know, sideways the next game. He was good every night. And just his leadership, you know, I call him the glue guy. He's the guy that talked to the rookies. He talked to the vets. He kept everybody engaged. He arranged team parties, team dinners. He just did everything. And then in, I think it was the third quarter, 3 minutes left, he thought he broke his ankle in game two and came to the bench and said, I got to go. He had to play the next shift because he had to show his team that he was ready to go, that their leader was okay. And he basically went out in the floor when he probably should have taken the next 5 or 6 minutes off. That's just the kind of player that he was.
And tremendous leader. I mean, everyone's watched this and everyone's people have been talking about it, but, you know, he's handed the MVP trophy and refuses to talk about himself or what he's done. Just calls Christian DelBianco over and just talks about everybody. And you can see why his teammates love him. Kurt Malewski talking about him like a little brother. It's not hard just watching his actions. I think somebody gave him a push when he went out to get the MVP trophy. He kind of stumbled and just kind of came back up and gave I meant to do that look and went over and got the trophy. Just seems like a fun guy to be around on the lacrosse floor.
He's just well liked by everybody. You know, being as good as he is for as long as he has been, still one of the most humble people around. And you know, he looks for everybody else's success and shares in their success and wants to see everybody else do well too. So that's why he's just loved by all his teammates and I'm sure by all the players in the league.
When I talked to Dan McRae, he said it's still kind of setting in what's happened. I ran into him last night at a game that I was covering that he was coaching, and he still had this big smile on his face. And I know you're coaching, I believe, with the Oakville Titans this summer, so you've got a summer season that you're rolling into. But has it settled in? Has it really hit you what this all means?
No, it's still a little surreal. I've seen a little some of the clips on social media, but I haven't really sat down and sort of watch the game from beginning to end, but I hope to do that this week and see the enjoyment in everybody else's face too, because at the end of the day, there's so many bad stories to championships, because these things start in August and it's not just one game, it's the build up to it, and the things that happen over the course of the year, the people that you meet, the experiences that you gain, that makes it all so worthwhile. And just one thing that I wanted to mention too was, we had two kids coming, LeClaire and Carson Leung,
right,
that would have been in their prime this year. And, mm-hmm. Injuries sort of cut their seasons or their careers short. And I just want to make sure that, they know that they're still in our minds and hearts too. And, we'd like to share this with them as well.
Yeah, a couple of terrific young players who were growing into big parts of the organization before they did run into the injury issues.
So it's kind of those backstories that, makes you really appreciate what you've accomplished. And, it's a memory that I'll never forget.
Appreciate you taking the time. It's always great to catch up. And heartfelt congratulations. And enjoy it. And we'll see you soon.
Okay, thanks very much, Dave. I'm sure I'll see you around the rink.
All right, lacrosse friends, that will wrap things up for this episode and this season of Box LaBeat on NLL Radio. Remember, you can also go find it on iTunes. Just look for Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I'm Stephen Stamp, your host and an editor at ilindoor.com, where you can find the best of Box Lacrosse coverage on the internet. Thanks so much to my guests, all four of them, Jesse King, Zach Currier, Dan McRae, and Bob McMahon. Excellent guests. I've had a bunch of Calgary Roughnecks on recently as they've gone through the playoffs, and it was really fun to talk to them all. Congratulations to them. Congratulations to the Buffalo Bandits on a fantastic season, and my thanks to all the guests I've had from them as well recently as they made their way to the championship series. And most of all, thank you, lacrosse friends, for being with me for another season of Box LaBeat on NLL Radio. Have a great offseason. We'll see you next year.